This is University Forum. I'm Jean Moore, bringing you conversations with outstanding personalities on issues of interest to local, national, and international communities. Our topic today, accounting. What kinds of specialties are there, and what is forensic accounting? My guest is Mr. Barry C. Berkowitz, a certified public accountant with a Master of Science in Taxation. He is a diplomat of the American Board of Forensic Accounting and a senior partner of Berkowitz and Berkowitz. And welcome to University Forum, Mr. Berkowitz.
Thank you, Dr. Moore.
I'm delighted to have you. Many people think about accountants primarily at the time of annual taxes, and either to help figure out how to pay them or how to avoid paying them or to answer questions. And you have a Master of Science in Taxation. If we could talk first about taxation, what are some of the key issues in that area?
Well, not to get specific about tax law, but in our practice, we tend to try to do tax planning so that the people are well aware of what their tax liabilities may be come April 15th. So the planning aspect of our practice is very important.
So you have to plan, so and nobody wants to be surprised and have the government tell us to.
That's the whole idea. You know, if to know what is going to be due on or around April 15th. You don't want to be surprised that you owe $50,000 or $10,000 when you don't even have half of that money.
Now, do people keep their records pretty good, or do they give you shoeboxes full of
receipts? No, we don't accept shoeboxes. In fact, yesterday, a guy who sent me a shoebox from England, he asked me to do his return again, and I said, and he owes his return for 2003, 2004, and 2005. I told him, these years, when you do this, please summarize it for us. Do not send us the shoebox.
Well, did he literally?
Honest to God, it was a shoebox.
I said that. I thought that was just a thing.
Well, that's the accounting joke, right? Let me give you your shoebox, and you figure it out.
Well, so many people do that. They don't. And then there are others who try to figure everything out, and they keep records, and then they want to send receipts of every tiny thing, including when they have a parking lot kind of thing. Is that helpful?
Well, you should, you know, keep good records of all that, because all that is, they are deductible items. But in fact, many of us, probably including me, miss some of it. You know, it falls through the cracks, and there's probably more deductions that each and every one of us would have. For instance, very simply, when you go to a football or basketball game and they ask you for a donation for child diabetes and you put in a dollar or two.
Yes.
Usually falls through the cracks because you do it in January, and come the next April 15th, 15 months later, you forget all about it.
Well, one of the things I guess would be helpful is, what do you think people should do to be prepared in advance as far as getting ready for the tax man?
Well, it's not a one, real. It's really not a one day, a year affair. It's just like we just said, you keep good records throughout the year and make sure that you pick up, number one, all your income, because Uncle Sam can keep a record of that now through the computers. But also, he can keep a record of some of your deductions.
Yeah.
Mainly the donations and some taxes that you pay or some interest that's paid. So consequently, you want to be very sure that whatever you do, even if it's the dollar or two at the football game where you're making a cash donation, to make a little note to yourself and put it in a file and just mark it 2000 and for this year, 2006 taxes, and you start putting things in that file from January right through the end of December.
I often think that for myself, for example, I like to wait sort of late in the year, almost down to the last month and maybe the last couple of weeks, for making the larger donations to a lot of different groups. How do you look at that? Do you look at the date that the tax, the check is made, or how do you, because it's before the end of the year, but is that a problem for the person who's sending it in around the 30th?
Not at all. Okay. The law actually states that as long as it's written within the calendar year, dated within that calendar year, then it becomes a deduction for you in that calendar year. Now, they want, Uncle Sam would like you to have that check cashed shortly thereafter. In other words, he doesn't want you to have a date on a check that says December 30th and it's cashed March of the following year. Mm-hmm. Then they'll get a little suspect of what's going on.
Yeah, I know a lot of times agencies will send you back when they got it, which might be a week or two after the first of the year.
Right.
And then so your records get a little bit.
You know what happens is we represent a lot of not-for-profit corporations, and I'm involved in the university here, I tell people, make your contribution. There's usually two times during the year that contributions are made. One is at the end of the calendar year, for right before the tax year, the individual tax year ends, or by June 30th, in which many not-for-profit institutions, the university here in particular, their fiscal year ends June 30th.
Yeah, that's always a little confusing.
Right, so those are the two dates. But if you make a contribution in June 30th of 06 and one in December of 06, it's still a good deduction for the calendar period.
Now, you're a CPA, a certified public accountant. What's the difference and between that and dealing with a non-certified person? What should a person look for when they're looking for an accountant?
Well, there's good accountants and there's good CPAs and there's bad CPAs and bad accountants. CPAs today, they go through 5 years of college training, and then they have to pass a test. It's a 2.5-day, I believe it's a 2.5-day test now. It was when I took it. May only be two now. And they have to pass a test and have 2 years of practical experience, and they get the designation of a CPA. So in that test, it's like, I tell everybody, it's like a final exam in accounting, cost accounting, auditing, taxes, individual taxes, corporate taxes, partnership taxes, financial accounting, knowing how to read financial statements. It's a final exam in every accounting course that's given at the university level. You could get a question on anything from any one of those courses.
Well, it's important if you're dealing with a lot of different areas to have a great deal of knowledge about them. It must be hard, though, to be specialists in all those areas.
Most of us can't be a specialist in all of those areas. There's many areas that we won't even bother talking to a person about because we're just not capable as a small, medium-sized firm that we are. For instance, if somebody actually just came to me recently and asked me to do a municipality, a small town. And I said that we just aren't capable. You'll have to find somebody else. Mm-hmm. You don't want to take on a job and then not be able to perform. You want to be able to do it the best that you can. And CPAs have a certain function, as do accountants. Depending on the size of your business or the complexity of it, you may not need a CPA. The CPA will be at the higher end generally of accountants, in their training and their skill and their commitment.
Mm. And ethics go into this too.
Ethics go greatly into this.
Yeah, we've heard of a few cases recently that involve some ethical dilemmas, as it is in many professions.
But yes, we've had them, and a lot of people have lost money because of our poor ethics.
Yeah. What do you think caused some of these larger known issues, things that have been in the press lately?
Greed. Mm-hmm. Greed's probably the biggest thing. Also, when an accounting firm, and these are usually the bigger firms that do the bigger public companies, they get millions of dollars for an audit. And, is the tail wagging the dog or vice versa? It's hard to say no to somebody who's paying you a lot of money to do something, but you need to have, ethics, and they're not there. It's interesting you say that. I am a certified public accountant and licensed in Pennsylvania. I'm also licensed in the state of Florida. The state of Florida has just instituted that you must take 4 hours of continuing professional education in ethics out of 80 required over a two-year period.
I wonder what precipitated that.
My sense is everything that went on with these big companies and trying to create, if nothing else, an understanding that there are ethics, whether some people, everybody bends every rule there is.
Yeah, because there are two entities involved, at least. One is the company itself that's operating under certain ways, and the other then is the company that's supporting the accountant that goes in. And it must be a dilemma. I know from an agency standpoint, I suspect they wonder, Well, what's the difference when the is done as an audit as against what's done as some other way of looking at what an agency or group right. is doing?
Well, there's three kinds of financial statements, actually, that can be provided by a CPA firm. One is called a compilation. Compilation really just says, you give me your financial information, and I will put it in the form that's needed, the mm-hmm. balance sheet, the income statement, mm-hmm. and a cash flow statement. And then you can put notes with that or not with that. But it's all it is you give me your information, I'll put it in the format that's required. The next level, the next higher level, is called a review. A review of financial statements tend to do a little bit more than that. It takes your information and then looks at different ratios and compares this year to last, this year to the norm, to the industry norm. And so there's more detail involved in putting that financial statement together. They're all the same statements. It's the balance sheet, the income statement, the cash flow statement with footnotes. The footnotes tell you what is in those financial statements. Then, of course, there's an audit. And an audit is I'll take your information and then I get third-party confirmation, or I satisfy myself by another way so that I'm pretty darn sure there are certain confidence levels that what you see on these financial statements are correct.
That must be the most difficult part of it, to actually confirm.
Yeah, it's the most difficult part. I just came back from a detail in Florida where we do that for a psychiatric hospital. And it's I went for 2 weeks, and I have two other people come with me for a week. So it's a month's worth of work. Mm. And it's interesting.
Yeah, well, I imagine the hospital itself must be very interesting. But to get behind the material that you get from the source and then to find out what the backup data are.
Oh, it's interesting.
And all that.
Yeah. Yeah. You find out if they're recording things properly or not. And this year I made, they were upset with me. I made almost a $400,000 adjustment to their receivables. So in essence, I took their receivables and reduced them by $400. They weren't real happy, but
$400,000.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but if you don't call it that way, at some point it's going to come back to haunt you, Edna.
Oh yeah. I'm putting, you know, we put our name on it. And,
That's right.
You know, for us, we don't have one client, and I won't do this anyway. I don't have one client that I would allow to dictate to me what goes on. Mm-hmm. It's just not worth it to me. I spent too much schooling, too much heartache in taking that CPA test, and I won't sell myself to anyone. I'll go to what the law allows in taxes, but financial statements, they, particularly with what went on with these public companies, you got to do it the way it's supposed to be done.
Can those companies ever really recoup their name? One in particular that was so well known and that was completely decimated by their interaction with some of the firms. Can they ever get back any value?
I would say no, because I think they've lost their credibility. And accountants, generally, the public says that they're one of the most trusted professions. Mm-hmm. But what has happened is it's really hurt our profession.
Yeah.
And because of it, we're required to do more and more. We have to go through a peer review, and we have to take certain continuing professional education. We're not allowed to be involved in having some kind of affiliation with them. Mm-hmm. We have to be independent of them.
Well, I know if I ever win the lottery, I should look for a very good accountant, one that has ethics.
Yes, before you announce to the public that you won.
What do you mean? When I win it.
Exactly.
Not get too excited about it or anything. Well, we are listening to University Forum with my guest, Mr. Barry K. Berkowitz, a CPA with several other initials after his name, one of which stands for Diplomat of the American Board of Forensic Accounting. So I'm going to ask Barry Berkowitz now, what is that Board of Forensic Accounting? What does it mean? And what is forensic accounting?
Forensic accounting for me is, it's not a major part of my practice, but in my practice, it's looking into the detail of how somebody lives their life. I'm involved through attorneys in looking at divorce cases. And it's not unlike an audit where you're delving into all the detail of transactions. But not only are you delving into the detail, you're looking to see what that detail is. Is there the husband who's spending a lot of money at the motels, going to the casinos? You know, you can see a lot about somebody's life by looking at their checkbook. You know, it reads their life.
Tells you where the money goes. It may not tell you why, though, huh?
May not tell you why. It definitely doesn't tell you why, but it does tell you where the application of funds go.
Well, now, as a forensic accountant, what would you have to do with that? I mean, how would you start out with it and work that through and make these tracings down?
What you do is you get, in my case, for divorce cases in particular, is you get all the bank statements, all the canceled checks, all the registers for every account that they have. Whether there's checks or not, sometimes they'll have a securities account where they're allowed to draw money out. So you look at each account, try to detail a history of what's happened in those accounts, where money comes from, where money goes, what is it going for? Mm-hmm. And then so all we do is we give our findings to the particular attorney involved.
Because there would be an attorney involved as far as the legal aspects of the divorce, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or fraud. You can get involved with fraud cases. A lot of times, I've never been involved with these, but I know of cases, I know people that do this. Many times you'll have sports agents who have control of large amounts of funds, sports and entertainment people. They have large funds that people entrust them with. And then all of a sudden, the money's not there that the individual thought was there, and somebody is... They think there may be some kind of fraud involved, so they bring in forensic people.
I would imagine that's a very important and difficult kind of thing to do, but I've heard of so many instances in which entertainers will say, when I've worked, I've done all this and all that, and now I don't have any money. Where did it go? And they don't
exactly
know.
You know, I thought it was very interesting. Yeah, you have to deal with honest people, and it goes back to ethics. But a number of years, about 5 years ago, Coach Chaney from here was inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But along with Coach Chaney going into the Hall of Fame was Moses Malone.
Yeah.
Moses Malone, who I don't know if he's an intelligent guy or not, but when he accepted his award, he asked his attorney, who is also his agent, to stand up. And he said that without this gentleman, he would have nothing. And to me, that was quite a feather in that guy's hat, because obviously he's an honest guy who cared about his client.
And protected his interest.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So often one gets the sense that maybe people who are going into certain kinds of entertainment and sports areas don't think in those terms, or they don't get to that, or somebody takes advantage of them.
Well, you know, a lot of these entertainers today and sports people today don't necessarily have the kind of education. They don't necessarily go to a university, a college, or they don't. If they do, they don't necessarily take the kind of business courses that would give them some kind of insight. So they're more vulnerable to somebody picking their pocket, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have large sums of money, more so than most of us will ever have. And all of a sudden, everybody becomes their friend. You know, I got a business deal for you. Well, it's a business deal for them.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. And I know you think so often that the lawyers are most important, but the lawyer may be important, but not if the accountant that's handling the monies deals with it before the attorney can get into it.
Right. They're there after everything went bad. The lawyers are there to clean it all up.
To what extent can the accountants help as far as sort of directing or enabling people to set up funds for retirement of their children and all, particularly some of the folks that we're talking about where they have families, they have responsibilities, and they need help not only with the here and now, but what to do with that money so that they'll assure that the family, when something happens to them, will have their money.
That's an interesting, very interesting concept, and that's a particular type of work that we do, and that is, depending on what your age is and what your position is in life, do you have young children or you're a grandparent, where are you? But number one, you want to set yourself up for your own retirement, whether it be your 401k, and you should fund it as much as you possibly can, your 401k, your 403b, if you're with an educational institution, your IRAs, your profit sharing or pension plan, should do all that. For children, there's the 529 plans that are came about just a few years ago to facilitate education so that the growth in those funds that are put away are not taxed as long as they're used for some kind of secondary education. All of that's helpful. If you are elderly and you're concerned about your will, you can set up certain trusts for your children and or grandchildren.
Can accountants help in that regard?
We can help in that regard, but the attorneys are the ones who put the instrument together. We as accountants make sure that the instrument is followed. A will or a trust really is something that gives you direction. It tells you what must be done with certain funds. Mm-hmm. So we help the people follow those directions, and then there are certain tax returns that have to be filed for them.
Well, that's one of the big questions. How much can be done so that taxes can be avoided legally, of course, but so that so often one says, well, if you don't do this right now, then your children have to pay all these taxes, and there you go. Are there any guidelines for this?
Oh, there's no guidelines.
No guidelines.
No, you just have to be sure that you're with a very experienced attorney or an accountant who works in that particular area. For instance, what came into vogue not too long ago were these what they call family limited partnerships, where wealthy people would start a partnership with their children. And of course, their children had no money, so they would gift a little bit of the interest in that partnership to them. And over time, gift them more and more and more. And they gift it. The theory behind it is, if I'm gifting a minority interest, that's worth less. So a dollar becomes worth less than a dollar because a minority interest has no value. Once you get over 50%, it then has value. But then you can have limited partners, which have no voting or no management authority, for 99%. And you could have a general partner for 1. So the parents who have a lot of money can give away 99% at a discounted value. And the parents who have 1% of the total equity in the partnership have 100% of the say. So they still control their children's money, but they've shifted from one generation to another and saved. The tax rate for estates is up to 54%.
Does that work still?
Oh, it works. It works. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to be careful. Of course, Uncle Sam isn't, you know, like my father was also a CPA in the business, and he says, just remember, IRS has been in the business longer than we have.
Well, not only that, sometimes don't parents make a mistake in the sense that they, quote, almost give a lot of this away?
Yes, sometimes they give too much away.
Yeah.
And then they lose control, and then the children find a need or a want or greed to keep the money and not help their parents if their parents get sick.
There was a case, in fact, I guess it's still current, of a woman who was quite elderly and was one of the very, very elderly and older families that was in the press not just a couple months ago, that spoke about how she was almost destitute and wasn't even getting enough food or care. And there was a question of, you know, who controls this and why isn't she getting what she needs?
That's disgraceful to me, but...
Yeah. It was quite a thing. But now, you're not just a numbers person as far as, if there is such a thing as just a numbers account. You work with a number of different agencies and groups. What's your major area of interest as far as working with groups? What do you like best of that?
I'm involved in a lot of committees and organizations, and if I won the lottery, like you talked about before, I would just get on these boards because I like to help people. And just about everything I do is involved in one way or another helping less fortunate people than me.
But now, let's not forget, we didn't say it in the beginning, that you're a graduate of Temple University School of Education, and you now are the treasurer of the General Alumni Association, right?
Yeah. And I've been the treasurer probably for 10 or 15 years now.
How large a body is the university's treasury?
The alumni
treasury. I mean, how large a body of people are involved?
I believe there's 104,000 active names.
Okay. That's enough.
Nothing to sneeze at.
No, that's not. And dealing with the Alumni Association, I guess you want to make sure that alumni contribute to the cause as much as possible.
Actually, the Alumni Association in itself does not ask or raise money from any individual.
Okay.
We are funded by the university to help the university. They have probably 8 people in their office. We have an endowment. I just left a meeting prior to coming here to invest all the money that the Alumni Association has, and that money helps run the alumni office. But when the university asks us to do something for them, we find a way through volunteers, dollars, or whatever it takes. We're here to serve the university.
Okay. Now, the alumni for each of the various different schools in the university, they make phone calls a lot. Now, is that on behalf of the Alumni Association, usually or on behalf of the college?
That's usually on behalf of the college.
The college.
In other words, what I am in the what they currently call the General Alumni Association, which is the parent, if you will, over all these college alumni associations. I'm also in the College of Education. I'm the treasurer there, too. I guess that's, as accountants, we're always made the treasurer. So each college has their own situation.
And you're on the board of trustees of Lackawanna College?
Still on that board. I've been on that board for 17 years.
I came off of it just about time I think you were coming on. And you have a lot of committees and foundation board of governors and on the boards as well as advising many nonprofit corporations, youth and civic groups. What gives you the most satisfaction?
The most satisfaction? I coach high school basketball.
Really?
In the inner city. And I love helping those kids.
And you have a favorite basketball person at the university, right?
Absolutely, John Chaney.
John Chaney.
Yeah. My friend, my client, my buddy, a special person.
So you really try to get into doing things that help people after you came out of the College of Education, and that's an interesting component.
It's different. Everybody says, oh, you're a CPA and you're a graduate of the College of Education.
How did that happen?
I wasn't sure whether I wanted to teach or not, and so what I did was I was in business education, and my emphasis was in accounting. So I took all the accounting courses I needed, but I had the flexibility when I graduated to go into some kind of accounting field or teach. And I have taught, actually, at Gwynn and Mercy College. I taught over time most of their accounting courses that they had in the mid-70s.
Now, your firm is Berkowitz and Berkowitz. So who sits with the firm, the other Berkowitzes?
My father.
Okay.
He's 82, and he comes in 3 or 4 days a week.
Make sure that
I'm doing the right thing.
Doing the right thing and all that. Well, if you had one recommendation to the students who are looking into accounting, would you make some suggestions as to whether they should go that route?
I think it's a great route for any kind of business that people are interested in. You can go into the finance field, the economics field, the banking field. You can go into the accounting field, whether it's in industry, in education, or you can go into the public sector. It's a great field because it's the structure of everything. It's the backbone of everything.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Mr. Barry Berkowitz, CPA and a fine human being. Thank you for being my guest on University Forum.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Gene Moore, leaving you with this thought. It's not always just the numbers that count, but the person with the heart and concern for others that's most important. Someone like Mr. Barry Berkowitz.
Thank you, Dr. Moore.
Please send your comments or questions on University Forum programs to me by email, jemoore@temple.edu, or call my voicemail 215-204-4376.